Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, September the 10th. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. The latest on the state budget, recommended reprimand for State Supreme Court Justice Annette Ziegler, the governor's trade mission to China. Some of the news will probably cover in this edition of the State Capitol Report. Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, will bring us up to date on the latest in state politics, on the public policy issues that affect you. After 7:30, we're going to hear from two guests with different positions on proposed cuts to family planning clinics in Wisconsin and on a bill that would make all hospitals in Wisconsin offer rape victims emergency contraception, a bill that received a hearing at the state capitol last week. And we invite you to join in anytime with your thoughts and questions on the budget stalemate or other state news issues by calling 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Sean Johnson joins us first. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Now, you covered this hearing on the emergency contraception bill last week. What exactly would that do?
It would force hospitals to tell rape victims that they have emergency contraception as an option. And if the victim wants it, the hospitals have to administer the pill. And this is also known as Plan B or the morning after pill. It's basically a high dosage of birth control. Supporters say it should be uncontroversial because it's designed to prevent a pregnancy from occurring. And, you know, they say that this is something that victims should have the option for wherever they go. And while many hospitals have it right now, it's not an option at every hospital.
No, remind me, it seems to me the state Senate did pass this bill and it was relatively uncontroversial, but it's not the same thing in the state assembly.
Yeah, only six people voted against it in the Senate. They were all Republicans, but it was a 27-6 vote, which is a pretty overwhelming vote when you have split control of the legislature. It means a lot of Republicans voted for it and all Democrats supported it. The assembly is a little different story. You've got a Republican majority there, and the bill was referred to a committee chair who is one of the legislature's staunchest opponents of abortion and a member of leadership. That's Representative Mark Gundrum. And so there was some question as to whether this bill would ever get a hearing at all. And then last week we were sort of surprised that there it is, popped up on the schedule.
So who did we hear from in the hearing?
You heard from a couple of groups of people, the supporters, some of them, including rape victims, who said that, you know, we need to have this option in Wisconsin. Madison resident Carousel Baird testified about how she was raped by a friend as a teenager, and she described how she was in no shape to help herself in the aftermath.
I was powerless. I was useless. I couldn't tell you my name. I couldn't figure out if I was crying or sleeping or dreaming. I couldn't remember what time it was. To tell you the truth, I have no idea even today if this happened if I was in the hospital at 3 in the morning or if I was actually at the hospital at 10 p.m. I have no idea. And that's why this bill is so important. It's just reminding people that you have this option.
And, you know, testimony like that is why this bill's been able to pick up some bipartisan support in the Senate and a couple GOP sponsors in the assembly. And supporters also like to argue that it's not an abortion bill because it's designed to prevent a pregnancy. But critics differ on that. And they say that the bill does not require hospitals to administer these pills if a woman tests positive on a pregnancy test. But some anti-abortion activists say that a pregnancy test is inadequate since it won't show until a fertilized egg implants itself in the uterus. And so this usually takes about 7 days. And urgent care doctor Kim Curry testified on behalf of herself at this hearing. She believes human life begins at an earlier stage.
Human life begins at the moment of conception. Implantation is a part of the process of a pregnancy. The only reason why we can't detect a pregnancy before implantation is because we don't have the technological means to detect it, not because there isn't a human life there. We just don't have the science to tell us that the human life is there.
So what about pro-life groups and religious groups? How do they feel about this bill?
Yeah, mostly Wisconsin Right to Life and the Wisconsin Catholic Conference, which are two groups which normally would testify against any abortion bill. they stayed out of this fight. They decided to testify for information only, and they stayed neutral in this bill. So, which is something that supporters point to. They say, hey, if this was really abortion that you're talking about here, I think that these two groups would be in on this. Pro-Life Wisconsin takes a different opinion, and they feel that this is mm-hmm. definitely an abortion bill in their mind. And so that's why they've been testifying against it, and they got a bunch of people to testify against it at this hearing.
Yeah. Well, medical groups, hospital associations, do they?
They're in support of this plan. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you look at the groups who are opposing it and supporting it on the Wisconsin Ethics Board website, it's mostly support. Groups like the nation's largest doctors group support emergency contraception. And that's something that supporters have pointed out, that while you had a couple doctors, oh, I should say more than a couple, that there were doctors that testified at this hearing who did not favor this bill. The medical community is far and away in support of it.
Yeah. Well, we will hear from a guest from Pro-Life Wisconsin and a guest from Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin to hear what they have to say about this bill regarding hospitals offering emergency contraception to rape victims coming up after 7:30. We're also going to hear from them on proposed cuts to family planning services and clinics. That's in the Assembly's version of the state budget. So we'll talk more about these issues coming up after 7:30. And we will talk more with Sean Johnson about what's happening at the state capitol after we check the weather. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for Sean at 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, September the 10th. Coming up later today after 6, On Point will not be heard tonight, so we can bring you an hour-long wrap-up of the Iraq War Progress Report hearing that's before Congress today. That's coming up after 6 tonight. Right now, we're talking with Sean Johnson about happenings at the state capitol. It's our weekly state capitol report where we review what lawmakers are up to. And Sean, I know I see in the news today that Republicans will be caucusing today. What are they going to be caucusing about?
Of course, you never know exactly. What happens in caucus stays in caucus. They don't generally talk about it too much, but they're going to be talking about the budget, obviously. That's what's happening at the Capitol right now. And the speaker has said that he told the Journal Sentinel over the weekend that, they're going to discuss the possibility of passing separate budgets for things like education and local governments instead of passing the whole budget all at once, which is normally what happens at the Capitol.
Yeah, why would why does he think separating these things would be a good idea?
There's a few reasons for them, but basically, if you've watched the budget deliberations at the Capitol recently, there's just nothing happening. Like watching paint dry or grass grow, whatever you want to call it. That's basically what it's been like right now. And you have some deadlines really looming in the near future, where if the state government doesn't do anything soon, schools are going to have to assume that they're getting last year's aid, which means they're going to have to lean harder on the property taxpayers if they want to keep up with the spending increases that they're accustomed to. And then also local governments, they're under a property tax freeze, or they were under the property tax freeze in the last budget, which has since expired. If that's not in the new budget, property taxes are going to go up. That's politically unpopular for both parties. So there is a real need to act now in some areas of the budget. And the speaker thinks if we can't get everything done, we can get these areas done.
There's nothing that prevents us from simply passing that portion of it, from simply saying that's the amount of money that we're going to provide. And rather than having the superintendent take just kind of guess whether or not we're actually going to be able to deliver those votes, but simply deliver those votes. Simply pass that portion of it and let the schools know what they're going to get. Let the property taxpayers know that their taxes aren't going to go up to the level that would happen, as Senator Decker said, if we don't pass a budget. So there's nothing that prevents that.
And he was referring to Senator Russ Decker there, another member of the conference committee and a Democrat. And Democrats don't like that idea at all because, they say the Democratic Governor Jim Doyle was asked about it. And he said that, you know, it's basically out of the question because it's irresponsible to do that kind of piecemeal budgeting.
You can't decide how much you're going to put into this part of the budget without any regard to what you're going to put into the other. A budget is a matter of putting all of the pieces of the state's fiscal picture in place. So to say you're just going to go and do this, well, what does that mean, whether you're going to be able to fund senior care in the state or whether you're going to be able to fund a decent road program?
So the Mike Hipshin wants the Republicans to caucus on this, possibly do this. The governor doesn't want him to do it. What does that mean? So is
yeah.
It,
well, I mean, Republicans, Hipsh could call the assembly in later this week, and they could pass some kind of education-only budget if they had the votes. And what that would do for him is it would sort of say, hey, it's not our fault that the budget is late here. If you go along with us, we have a plan that funds education here, and we'll be fine. The other downside that for Democrats that the governor didn't mention there is that if they were to go along with this and pass this education and local government only budget, it sort of puts Republicans in the driver's seat to some degree, because suddenly with that pressure off, they can dictate more the pace of the rest of the budget, because and they're more comfortable with keeping spending at last year's levels, or at least many of their members are more comfortable it's keeping spending at last year's levels. So they're maybe more comfortable at that point with having a more deliberate pace. But right now, they know that they need to act, and so this is kind of the approach they're taking.
Mm-hmm. Let me, before we move on to some of the other issues, take a call from Chris in Eau Claire. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question about an article that was in the Wall Street Journal last week about the housing slump affecting tax revenue for states, and whether or not that has been factored at all or even mentioned in the Wisconsin budget, and whether that's going to affect what the budget outlook is like for next year. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
I don't know, Sean, if you know if that's come up in any of the negotiations or discussions.
It's a good question, and it hasn't. And when lawmakers went into this round of budget negotiations, in fact, when the governor went into this year's budget, he decided that he had $1.2 billion of new revenue to work with. That is, even if you don't raise any taxes, just general growth in the economy will give the state $1.2 billion more to work with. And so that's what everybody's been basing their budgets off of. There's you know, a real possibility with this housing slump that you wouldn't even have that new growth there. And it has not been brought up. And, you know, in some of the budgets, it would have real consequences if you had a big slump in the housing market. You know, for example, in the Assembly Republican budget, they don't have much cushion in their plan. They have about, you know, $9 million in the state checkbook at the end of 1 year. And so that's not enough to weather a storm, so to speak.
Yeah. So the budget conference committee is still going to be meeting on Wednesday or whatever day they typically meet, or not this week?
I don't know what their schedule is this week. They've typically been meeting once to twice a week. It looks like more once a week lately, because I think even they've acknowledged that they're not saying much at the table right now. It's, you know, just the same thing over and over again to a large degree. Leaders insist that they're also, and leaders being Assembly Speaker Mike Hipsch, who we heard earlier, and Senate Majority Leader Judy Robson, they say that they're also meeting behind closed doors, which, you know, like it or not, is where a lot of budget deals ultimately get made, where they can sit down without the cameras on and without every word being quoted and speak frankly about, you know, what gets left on the table what gets taken off.
Well, last week, I know some Republicans were suggesting that Governor Doyle should cancel his trade mission to China and crack the whip and see to it that that a budget got passed by, you know, playing leader on this. He didn't cancel his trade mission, did he?
No, he's had that in the works for much of this year. And, you know, the governor has staff available who can, you know, talk about the budget. There may come a point where the governor himself needs to sit down and get both sides of the table and sort of mediate things. But he hasn't shown any indication that we're there yet. And he's in China and Japan until the 18th.
Mm-hmm. Also last week, Annette Ziegler, the newly elected state Supreme Court justice, It was found out that she faces or a recommended reprimand for some conflict of interest charges. So bring us up to date on that.
Right. Ziegler, during the campaign this year against Linda Clifford, it came out that she had sat on some cases as a judge in Washington County that involved, you know, it was a conflict of interest where her husband was on a board of directors for this bank. And so the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign brought a complaint, made it public, and the Judicial Commission just now decided that, and they reached a stipulation with Ziegler, and where she acknowledged breaking state ethics laws that when she heard cases as a circuit court judge involving that bank. And the recommendation was a reprimand.
Which means naughty. You did a bad thing.
Basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Democracy Campaign says, you know, that's not enough. It's just a tap on the wrist. The other side of that coin is that this never happens. And it will be with Ziegler forever that she was a sitting justice who was reprimanded. But I, you know, the Democracy Campaign would argue that it means nothing when you have a Supreme Court justice with a 10-year term. It's pretty much the safest incumbency in any level of state government. Once you win that seat, it's really hard to knock off a Supreme Court justice. And 10 years from now, is this going to matter? You know, in the minds of voters, probably not.
Yeah, but the Democracy Campaign thought she should be suspended for hearing these cases. But it's up to
the judges on the Supreme Court.
Right, I was going to say it's not a done deal until the state Supreme Court decides without Ziegler on it. Right,
right. And mm-hmm. you know, having never observed something like this, I don't mm-hmm. know. I don't know how it works, but you would assume, given the amount of time that the Judicial Commission spent on this, that they were pretty deliberate on it.
Yeah. Well, let's see what Ann in Madison wants to know. Hi, Ann. You're on the air.
Hi. I really like Sean Johnson's reports. I think he's really a great reporter. He's doing a good job. I wanted to know whether it would be possible for reporters at Wisconsin Public Radio to find out which groups were behind the Republican version of the budget, which is, it seems to be an anti-public sector budget. And my opinion is that legislators who don't believe in the public sector should get out of government. You know, what they're acting as now is basically Trojan horses to try to destroy it. And for Wisconsin to be considered the most right-wing, you know, anti-education, anti-public everything, the state and the whole country, that should be a source of shame to Wisconsinites. And I would suggest maybe people go to the Legislative Reference Bureau off the square and do a little research there. Look at some of the bill's files and see what kinds of pressures are being exerted on certain members of the legislature.
And I don't mean to interrupt, but we're almost at our news break, and I need to give Sean a moment at least. 30 seconds, Sean. Do we know who is behind the Assembly's version of the state budget?
Well, Ann mentioned you could go look at these the files that the bill drafters draw up when they make these things. But another option is go to the State Ethics Board website, and it's just a treasure trove of information if you want to find out who's lobbying your government.
Sean, thanks very much. We appreciate your reports, too. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter, with us every Monday for the State Capitol Report after 7 o'clock. We'll continue coming up after the news. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Monday, September the 10th. And this is our State Capitol Report. We will get two sides in this half hour on a bill that would make hospitals in Wisconsin tell rape victims about emergency contraception. Plus, we'll find out how family planning services are affected by the Assembly's version of the state budget. And we will welcome your questions and views on both 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. A plan to require hospitals to tell rape victims about emergency contraceptives and offer the pills if the victims want them got a hearing in an Assembly committee last week. There was some doubt if it would ever see the light of day in the Assembly. The measure's GOP sponsor, Representative Terry Musser, sounded pleasantly surprised at the hearing.
There's a lot of guessing as to why this bill got a hearing, and it comes down to, I really don't care. I just want to thank the chair and the committee members for giving us a chance to have a public hearing on this bill. And as you can see, there's a couple of interested parties out there.
He was referring to the crowds of people waiting to testify on the bill in the hallway outside the small committee room. The hearing was significant because the chair of the committee, Mark Gundrum, is anti-abortion, and so are a few members of his committee. Supporters of this bill say it is not an abortion bill, but critics differ. We will talk with two interested parties during this half hour. We start with Chris Taylor, Public Policy Director for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. She joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So you support this bill that would require hospitals to tell rape victims about emergency contraception?
Right. Planned Parenthood is very much supportive of this bill. We are part of a broad statewide coalition that supports the bill. There really is not one hospital in the entire state that opposes the bill. This bill does require that hospitals tell victims about emergency contraception and dispense it if requested by the patient. This is a standard of care, Joy. This is what groups like the American Medical Association and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists and the emergency room physicians say should be happening in every situation where a rape victim walks into a hospital emergency room. This is the standard of care which should be applied to all rape victims. There's absolutely no dispute about that. There was not one person who testified that this wasn't the standard of care that was expected in the medical profession. Unfortunately, we do know, though, from a recent survey that only one-third of Wisconsin hospitals are even offering EC to rape victims, with 42% categorically not dispensing it. So this bill is really just asking that rape victims get the same standard of care that every other patient gets in the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah. Why should this be the standard of care?
Well, it should be the standard of care because the medical profession believes that every patient deserves to know all of their treatment options, which is called informed consent, which is already in our law. And this is the pregnancy prevention is a very critical piece of treating rape victims. And in the American College or the American Medical Association's guidelines on the treatment of rape victims set forth that this is an important critical piece. Obviously, when rape victims come into a hospital emergency room, and we had many rape survivors testify at this hearing with very, very powerful stories about their trauma and why this bill is so important. But when a rape victim comes into a hospital emergency room, they don't know what questions to ask. They might not even know about emergency contraception. But you can bet that if asked about whether they want information about pregnancy prevention, and not just pregnancy prevention, but sexually transmitted disease infection prevention and AIDS prevention, anything that they can get that can protect them against disease and perhaps an unintended pregnancy, usually they're very interested in that information. They certainly are the ones that need to be making the decisions about pregnancy prevention and certainly should be offered the information and the medication if requested. The only individuals that really came to this hearing that oppose this bill are people that oppose all forms of birth control. They oppose condoms, they oppose the pill, they oppose the patch, they oppose every form of birth control. And really, the crux of their objection to this bill is just that, they oppose birth control. And that's end of story. They're pretty adamant about that. You know, I felt like being in this hearing, I was alive 50 years ago when we were debating whether women should have access to birth control. It's kind of the same arguments that I hear over and over again at these hearings, and it's quite sad that we're still debating whether women, nevertheless, rape victims, should have access to birth control, which is what emergency contraception is.
Address the concern of opponents, though, that they say this emergency contraception bill would prevent the implantation of a fertilized egg, thereby causing the, natural abortion of this human life as they see it.
Sure. All birth control works in three ways, or it can work in three ways, including emergency contraception. It can prevent ovulation. It can prevent a woman from expelling an egg. It can prevent fertilization, which means the egg and the sperm meet. And it can prevent a fertilized egg from implanting in the wall of the uterus. You know, people differ on when life begins. Religions don't agree. That's a theoretical, that's a philosophical question. But we know when pregnancy begins. And pregnancy begins when that fertilized egg implants in the wall of the uterus. That's when hormones start being emitted that can detect a pregnancy. There's really not a dispute about that, Joy, in the general medical population. There's not one major medical organization that will dispute that's when pregnancy begins, that a pregnancy does not begin with a fertilized egg. In fact, women throughout their lives have many fertilized eggs that don't implant, and they're never aware of that. So there's really not a dispute in the medical community. The dispute about birth control is a dispute that I really find happens in the Capitol. But when you go out in the general public, people look at you like you're crazy when you say birth control pills cause an abortion. Most people are using birth control at some point in their life. And what we know is, you know, it's called contraception, preventing conception. And conception starts when that egg implants in the wall of the uterus. And there is not a dispute about that. I think the opponents really want to make it a dispute. They want to talk about when life begins. And, you know, we're just not interested in engaging in that. We're interested in the facts. We're interested in making sure that every person has access to birth control. And we're certainly interested in making sure that rape victims are not the victim of medical malpractice as well in the hospital emergency room. And that's really what happens when victims are denied this information and denied access to this medication. It really is tantamount to medical malpractice. This is the standard of care. Every hospital emergency room should be following it, and there's no reason why they aren't.
Yeah. Let's go to Tim in Sparta, who has a question. Hi, Tim.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. First off, I would just say that I am not against birth control. I think that birth control is obviously a good thing. But I was just curious, in this legislation, is there any provision in there that when I'm listening to your guest, she's saying that she wants patients' rights and the information to be out there. Is there anything in the legislation that would give the information that the danger of the morning after pill? I know of a young lady in California that just recently passed away after taking the morning after pill, and there is a danger and a risk factor with that.
What about that, Chris?
Yeah, you're mistaken, actually. There was a death from a woman who took mifepristone, RU486. That is a pill that will cause an abortion. There has never been a death from emergency contraception. Emergency contraception is less toxic than aspirin. The FDA just approved over-the-counter use of emergency contraception. There is some risk of cramping when you take emergency contraception, and that certainly would be provided to the patient. The bill instructs that the patient be provided with all the information about emergency contraception as approved by the Federal Drug Administration. So, no, I'm sorry, to the caller is actually mistaken. It was not emergency contraception.
Yeah. The morning after pill or emergency contraception is not RU486, which is sometimes referred to also as the abortion pill. Yeah. We have just a couple of minutes left here with our segment with you. You're also concerned about the Assembly's version of the state budget when it comes to family planning services. What cuts concern you?
Right. Well, this is kind of the same. It's kind of it's really a very similar issue to the Compassionate Care for Rape Victims bill, in that we have a group of anti-birth control legislators trying to really gut the state family planning system. There's a provision in the budget that forbids any private family planning provider from receiving state funds. And in our network of family planning providers, family planning services are offered in about 70 counties in Wisconsin. And that's very deliberate to make sure that all women have access to family planning services. Well, this provision in the budget takes out about 32 counties. So almost half of the counties would be left without a family planning provider, because these health centers would not be eligible for any state monies. And most of these family planning centers depend on state monies. This impacts over 31,000 patients. And it also impacts millions of federal dollars that Wisconsin gets when we spend money on family planning. It impacts counties as far north as Douglas County and Bayfield counties, and as far south as Monroe and Kenosha. It really impacts counties all over the state. So we are very concerned with this provision that we have never seen before, not in an independent bill, certainly not in the budget, just categorically saying if you're a private family planning provider, you are not eligible for state funds. Yeah. And it's important to note that none of these facilities that are affected perform abortions. No public monies can be used for the performance of abortions. We are talking about health centers that offer cervical and breast cancer screening and access to birth control and testing and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases. So these are really critical services to low-income women who really have nowhere else to go. So we're very concerned with preserving funding for family planning in the state budget.
And we'll leave it there. We need to check weather and bring in our other guest. Chris Taylor, thanks very much for being with us. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report for Monday, September the 10th. It's about 11 minutes before 7 o'clock. Coming up after 8 o'clock, I'll be talking with the author of the book, The Paranoia Switch, How Terror Rewires Our Brains and Reshapes Our Behavior, and How We Can Reclaim Our Courage. Joining us now is Matt Sandy, Legislative Director of Pro-Life Wisconsin, who will give us his take on the emergency contraception bill that received a hearing last week before the state legislature and why he supports the cuts for family planning clinics in the Assembly's version of the state budget. Again, we welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Matt Sandy, Legislative Director of Pro-Life Wisconsin, joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
So were you at this hearing last week testifying against the emergency contraception bill?
Yes, I was, and we also had physicians from around the state testifying against the bill, OBGYNs from Milwaukee, ER physicians from central Wisconsin, and they were educating the members about the abortion-causing action of the morning-after pill and also imploring the committee members not to violate their conscience rights. And, you know, Pro-Life Wisconsin's primary opposition to the bill focuses on the abortion-causing action of emergency contraception, so-called emergency contraception. And again, the pharmacological mechanism of the drug is not in dispute. We know that it can work to block the implantation of a newly conceived human life, a human embryo. It basically alters the lining of the womb, the endometrium, irritates it, and that little tiny embryo cannot have any nourishment and is therefore flushed out and dies. And that is what we term a pre-implantation chemical abortion. Now, that is not a naturally induced abortion. That is artificially, chemically induced. And for that reason, there are people of conscience in the medical profession that refuse to dispense it. And that is why they came to the committee hearing yesterday, or I'm sorry,
last
Thursday.
Briefing. Yeah. I mean, the emergency contraception, we were told, could prevent the fertilization, could prevent the actual conception. But yes, it could prevent the implantation. But the pregnancy itself does not begin until that implantation.
Well, you know, we can argue about the definition of pregnancy, you know, as much as we want. I mean, there are different definitions. The Mosby's Medical Dictionary defines pregnancy from fertilization. But that's not the critical question. The heart of the matter is when human life begins, because that's what we're ultimately trying to protect. And there is a consensus among the embryological scientific community that human life does indeed begin at fertilization, the union of an egg and sperm resulting in a genetically distinct human being. And so because we know that life begins at fertilization, any artificial action that would work to destroy that life, whether at the fetal stage by surgical abortion or whether at the embryonic stage by chemical abortion, is abortion. And that is why the physicians and people of conscience around the state are opposing the bill. Now, we do obviously sympathize with victims of sexual assault. It's a horrific crime. They do have a right to defend themselves against conception from a rapist. They're not obligated to become pregnant. But it is impossible, given the current technology, to determine whether or not fertilization has occurred at the time EC is directed to be taken. And that's the problem. There is a so-called exception in the bill that says the hospital does not have to provide EC to a victim who is pregnant, as indicated by a test for pregnancy. But a standard pregnancy test is only going to determine implantation. The other side has said, well, EC is most effective in that first 24 hours after sexual intercourse. Well, standard pregnancy tests will not be useful at that time. And so the overall analogy is that, you know, for example, a hunter in the woods, he or she sees something moving behind a bush. They refrain from shooting because it could be a human being. They're exercising restraint. Well, we must exercise the same restraint in protecting newly conceived human life. What's really lost here, well, I would also add that, you know, it was brought up by the earlier caller or your guest from Planned Parenthood that providing EC to rape victims is a standard of care. Well, if two-thirds of Wisconsin hospitals are not providing it, I would argue, is that the standard of care?
The supporters of this bill, though, say the vast majority of the medical community is behind the plan that Wisconsin Right to Life, another pro-life group, but not yours, and the Catholic Conference decided to stay neutral on this bill. What about that?
Well, I would say, you know, if you're thinking, let's talk about the Catholic position. The Catholic Medical Association, the National Catholic Medical Association, opposes the use of emergency contraception for any reason. Okay, their resolution back in 2003 states that EC, or the drug, has the potential to prevent implantation, whether given in the pre-ovulatory, ovulatory, or post-ovulatory phase, that it cannot be ethically employed by a Catholic physician or administered in a Catholic hospital in cases of rape. Also, our Milwaukee Guild of the Catholic Medical Association opposes this bill. So the Catholic doctors in our country, in America, oppose the use of the morning after pill in cases of rape. Okay. Also, the Vatican, the Pontifical Academy for Life, they have publicly opposed the use of the morning after pill for any reason. So the Wisconsin Catholic Conference is not speaking for all Catholics on this issue, certainly not the Catholic doctors. And all I can say at Pro-Life Wisconsin is that we have a consistent life ethic that we are faithful to. That life begins at fertilization and ought to be respected till a natural death. And that means that we are respecting life on its continuum at all the embryological stages of development, whether at the embryonic stage or the fetal stage. And that is why we oppose surgical abortion, but we also oppose chemical abortion induced by hormonal contraceptives. We oppose, for example, human embryonic stem cell research or research cloning. So, you know, that is our position, and that is why we are opposing this bill. And like I said, if it were possible to detect fertilization accurately, and knowing that a woman has to defend herself against conception in the event of rape, that would be a different story. But at this point, we just don't have that technology.
Let me be on
the side of innocence.
Let me move on to budget cuts contained in the Assembly's version of the state budget, which would cut state funding to private family planning clinics. Our guest in the last segment of the program said it would cut like half of the state's counties from getting this money. What's your position on those family planning services cuts?
Well, what Pro-Life Wisconsin has been focused on, and it has been fighting for some time, is a program called the Medicaid Family Planning Demonstration Project. And that program currently provides birth control and other reproductive services to 15, 16, 17-year-old girls behind parents' backs. In other words, this is free taxpayer-funded birth control to girls as young as 15, 16, 17. No parental consent, no parental knowledge, of course. And we have opposed that. That undermines parental authority naturally. It also fuels teen sexual promiscuity and the pathologies that emanate from that, whether it's underage pregnancy, abortion, skyrocketing STDs. And now the governor and the Senate Democrats want to expand this program to boys, 15, 16, 17-year-old boys. And we, again, feel that that further undermines parents' rights in this very sensitive area of teen sexuality, that parents are naturally concerned about the health, the sexual health of their teen sons and daughters, not only to protect them physically, but to guide them morally, and they ought to be part of the picture. And so we have worked to, at least in the Assembly budget, to eliminate the expansion of the program to young boys And we've also worked to raise the minimum eligibility age for the program from 15 to 18. See, right now, federal Medicaid law requires confidentiality. And because we cannot do anything about that here, we our only option is to raise that minimum eligibility age for the program, which seven other states have done, including Illinois, mm-hmm. Michigan, North Carolina, and several others. They have raised that minimum eligibility age, and we think that's a good way to go, and that is what the assembly budget does.
All right. I need to leave it there. We're out of time. Matt Sandy, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Joy. I appreciate it.
Matt Sandy, Legislative Director of Pro-Life Wisconsin. Earlier in the half hour, we heard from Chris Taylor, Public Policy Director for Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin. Thanks to Leo Duran and Karen Prager for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.